Welcome to the Top Gear Magazine podcast, a peek behind the curtain of what it's really like to drive other people's cars for a living. These are the stories behind the stories. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Jack Ricks. This is next to me. What's your name?
My name is Rowan Horncastle. Nice to meet you.
Sorry, a little bit disrespectful there. And this is over here?
Ollie Marriage.
We've only worked together for over a decade. Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
First day back at school.
So today, we are going to be talking about bye-bye R8. Well, the Audi R8. We're going to be waving goodbye to it. Production ends pretty much any day now, doesn't it?
So like 22nd of March.
I 22nd think of March.
Officially is the like the
mark
day,
your calendars, everybody.
Yeah.
If your Audi R8 advent calendars, counting down the days for it.
Quick!
Yeah.
Get out there.
Tissues at the end just to cry away.
But before we get to that, let's just go through the housekeeping. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to the podcast and then you won't miss any pods when they come out. Every Wednesday, tell your friends about the podcast. Leave a review. Review. That's a tricky word.
Where do you leave one of those?
Leave a review. Sorry, I went. Something went wrong there. Contact us. You can get hold of us through all of Top Gear's social media channels. So you can send direct messages, Insta, Twitter, Facebook, whatever you like. You can leave a comment if you're listening to this on Spotify, or you can leave us a review and a comment on Apple Podcasts. And we're quite keen to get a Q&A podcast off the ground where we take your questions. What do you want to know about us, me, Rowan?
No, personal ones necessarily. Within the world of cars, I think, and Top Gear, yes. They don't want to know what colour socks you're wearing today. Are they green?
I'm not wearing any socks. what questions do you want to ask us? Is a better way of putting it, and we'll do a whole podcast on that. So that's very exciting. Get involved, people.
You've got the questions, we've got the answers.
Potentially.
Once we've looked up on Wikipedia.
Yeah, which we'll see. But we're talking about the Audi R8 today. You know, Audi's supercar. Is it the car that made them less boring?
Oh, that's a good shout. But yes, I think TT probably did it first.
Yeah, I remember back when the TT was announced.
The R8 was like a... But the thing is, as soon as everyone drove the TT, they went, oh, yeah, it's a bit actually not that interesting
bit
to drive.
Bit of a poser's car.
Really, really lovely bit of design, though.
Yeah.
Really, but the R8 came along and it was bloody good.
Yeah.
It really was. I went on the first... I don't think it was the original. So I think they did a launch and then they did... There was like a sort of more UK media launch that they did at Paul Ricard in the south of France. And I went down there with a bunch of rivals. And it was one of the very few times I've had that you get into a car and within 50 metres, that old 50 metre thing about you knowing it's good already. And I went, oh my God, this is brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. First,
was it that first click? Clack of the gear sticks
and
the open
and
gate,
all of that,
yeah,
and just the weighting of it and the look of it and the feel of it.
The engine wasn't an unknown quantity, you know. It was the
4.2 V8, but 410 horsepower or so, wasn't it? It was a magic bit of kit.
But what were you expecting? You know, Audi coming out with a supercar. Were you?
Because you'd driven the TT and other things and gone, oh, well, we know how this drives. It's a bit wooden. It's a bit nose heavy. Suddenly, here was a car with real finesse and balance, and we actually made the 911 at the time feel a bit plain. It was so playful as well. It was really
exciting
to drive.
The main thing I remember from then was the carbon side blades. I thought that was such a clever and really impactful bit of design, which I was a lot younger at the time. You're like, wow, you know, carbon fiber does a lot of things to young people wearing it, but it's like a whole slab of it, which they've got rid of now because it's more like the spider's
heart one. So you could have them back in the day on the original one, sort of carbon or like gloss black or body coloured.
Body coloured or anti body colour.
But it's cool. Sharp looking thing, which has got is really interesting looking back at see how the designs evolve, because it has just got sharper. The lines have got, you know, a lot straighter across the whole thing. They have got an Audi heritage car, haven't they? They've got the V8 manual. I've never driven it.
I mean, I haven't driven that one, but
the original launch car.
You borrowed one recently, didn't you?
But that was borrowed the LMX.
The LMX,
which was the last of the line of the first gen ones.
Of the V10.
Wasn't it LMX because it had the laser headlights or something?
Laser lights.
Which I tested recently in a dark tunnel. It was used for a recce for a YouTube series, which, depending when this comes out, will come out shortly afterwards, where we've gone very fast in tunnels. And it was really useful to see that laser lights. But this is, you know, the R8 has come out of Audi's Le Mans program, which we forget now was such a big part of their motorsport activity then, and the headlines that they were grabbing.
They just used the same name, didn't they?
Well, the R8 was the most successful Le Mans car, I believe, at the time, from race starts and how many it had done, with Tom Christensen and Alan McNish from it. So when you say Audi R8 to me, my brain actually automatically jumps
to the race car.
Goes to the race car. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, got hardcore, aren't I?
You know? Yeah,
born on the racetrack.
And then, yeah, which you forget, and we'll meander through the history of the R8. Yeah. And it's, when you actually collect it all together, it's had every bit of technology thrown at it, including the laser lights, diesel engines, you know, electric, the whole lot.
Well, Audi is a sort of technology-led company, and this is their technology sort of torchbearer. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Over the years, we'll go through it, but they've just lobbed whatever was the sort of, you know, powertrain or du jour. Lob it in the R8.
They said they'd lob it in the R8, didn't they? Well, they got it into concept stage and
I'm talking about concepts. I just want to go off on a quick tangent before we get tucked in properly to the sort of R8 timeline. That thing you just spoke about, that 50-meter rule, I'm just interested, what other cars have you felt the 50-meter fizz?
Mark V Golf GTI.
Oh, yeah.
Mark V Golf GTI.
McLaren 6M5 LT for me.
Really?
Yes, had that just getting any straight
Alpine away. Alpine A110, maybe?
Yeah, I felt it in the Alpine. Yeah.
It's actually really useful here at our office because how vibrant you want to be leaving the office, but you leave our underground bat cave lair of everything, and there's a really steep, sharp speed bump, like steeper than you'd get traditionally on the road. That automatically gets you, you know, your ride impression.
Yeah, yeah. You actually had the second gen R8 long term. It did that weird sort of bouncy porpoising thing.
It went over it, and I put a GoPro on the rear wheel because it was the weirdest movement. And you watch it, it's like when you get below like 5 miles an hour or something, it's like they just switch off all the damper tech. And so it just like it's pattering, flopping thing.
So you've got the damping on the thing, and then there's the uphill slope.
There's an uphill slope, and then a 90 left, which I'm not the first person to ever leave the office and spin a car there. And there's actually...
Julia...
No,
Quadrifoglio.
Julia Quadrifoglio Long. I got very adept to the steering lock on that in and out of the office. And there's actually two previous colleagues of ours have spun on the way down the ramp.
Ooh, have they?
Yeah. That's a bit spicier.
There is, and I got a call. I was in an, I don't know, should I say the car? I was twin testing over a week the Mercedes AMG GTR Pro. Mm-hmm. And then I got into a normal one. So I got quite used to what the Pro would do. And then I got into the normal one and I span it on the way outside.
I mean,
that
extra downforce is really useful coming out the
car. It was more the tyres than anything else. But then security, it was deeply embarrassing because you have to reverse and turn around and get to the security gate and give them a nod. And then there was a rather sharp email from facilities manager saying, who did this? Because it was all on CCTV. Luckily, my boss at the time said, oh, yeah, it is a tricky service change, isn't it?
Oh,
so I'd fallen foul of that before. So
675 LT, I felt in the GR Yaris. I know, like, the sort of wave of adulation that came afterwards almost took a bit of a shine off the GR Yaris because it became, like, the most unimaginative thing ever to say that the GR Yaris had a bit of magic in it.
I thought that was really good with it. Okay. Like 50 meters, you could kind of tell that. But
I'm at the first Porsche I ever drove was a Boxster, and I remember feeling up until that point I'd only read about Porsches and how they were sort of held in this kind of esteem above everything else. And I got and pulled out of the car park at my old job, round the corner into the middle of London in the traffic, and was like, yeah, get it. Just the way it sounded and the felt and the steering and just the control weights.
A Rolls Royce is pretty special too, because that just feels slightly different, the steering and everything else that goes into it. But
any of them.
Dynamically, but as Ollie said, dynamically you can tell a lot of stuff if it's screwed together properly straight away. So if the R8, as you went out, Paul Ricard, which has a monstrous straight as the first thing that you attack, and then a big braking area.
No, I think unfortunately, because we were off into the hills, we went straight onto the road from there. But Paul Ricard is one of the, here's another little one I always like, is what racetracks have got brilliant roads right outside the gates? Paul Ricard's one. Paul Ricard's got some cracking, Knockhill. Yeah. Knockhill, turn left out the circuit from Knockhill. Mega Road.
I remember when we went there once, and it was when the Civic Type R was new, which we loved, the previous generation. Mm. And we arrived at the circuit with the brakes basically on fire before we'd even started lapping because we had such a good time on the road beforehand.
Before you done a hot lap.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
So, should we sort of pick our way through like a bit of a timeline? Otherwise, we're just going to jump around like madmen and start chatting about the ones we liked. But so it was a long time ago. You must have been driving the R8 V8. It was shown in 2006.
Yeah,
so it must have been 2007.
I drove it. Yeah, yeah. But they'd already shown, the concept had already been shown, wasn't it? Like 2003 or something?
Yeah, so there was a Le Mans Quattro concept, which we had to sort of refresh ourselves on a bit. I mean, it looks just like the production.
It's an R8,
isn't it? It was a good concept, that one. They hit the nail on the head. 3 or 4 years before they actually put it into production. But there was another one, wasn't there, before it went into production.
Was it the iRobot
one?
Yeah, the iRobot one.
The RSQ. Okay, I drove that.
No way.
I drove that. Yeah.
Does it actually have wheels? Wasn't it?
You were a really weird stunt double for Will Smith. They got the casting wrong there.
No, they brought it to the UK. Maybe it was here for filming or something. And I drove it like up and down the driveway at a famous golf club somewhere.
Talk to me.
Exactly. I'm trying to think where they filmed Goldfinger. That famous Sean Connery bomb film where he drives.
Is it in the UK?
Yeah, it's near Slough somewhere.
It's going to be like Wentworth or something like that. Sunningdale.
No, I can't remember what it is. Anyway, they literally Audi parked it there and said you can drive it up and down the drive. And I drove the RSQ, the iRobot.
Did it have an engine or was it electric?
Yeah, I think it was fairly ordinary underneath. I think it was probably a TT underneath.
How many pages in the mag did you get out?
Oh, it was probably quite a lot.
Cover story for
a weekly at the time.
Just spin it out over the next 3 issues.
But anyway, so there was that, the RSQ.
That was cool. I gave the whole thing a little bit of mystique. Like, I remember sort of, they were like, whoa, you can get a real version of Will Smith's space age concept car, although there'd already been a much more realistic looking concept car before that.
Yeah.
But it had covered wheels.
I think the idea that the wheels could turn completely sideways.
It did funky things in the film, but obviously the one you drove was just spats.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it had
a rear hinged suicide swan door. It's like they threw every possible supercar door at it into one thing. when the production car came, it was pretty short. But pricing wise, where was it then at that time? Was it 911? Price?
Yeah, it was 9/11 money. Yeah. It was like, what were they, 60, 70 grand at the time?
Which sounds really good now, doesn't it, to get a supercar for that kind of price, like really top-end stuff. Yeah.
It felt more special, I think, when it first came out because it was mid-engined and it was and rear drive, Quattro actually initially, wasn't it? And it was just a bit more distinctive,
also,
I guess.
Yeah, but it was also a novelty to have something so mad from Audi that's obviously they've had moments of madness in their history, but tended to be more straight-laced. Yeah, and suddenly it was this like exuberant, it's the Italians that do mad stuff like that. But no, the Germans were having a crack.
Loosened their tie. I thought, they will have a go at this. Yeah. And it's actually worked really well for them, how long it's lasted. And then what was really nice, it didn't just fade away. It then got a bit madder because when you start getting V10 engines
V10 was a couple of years later. And there was do you remember that sort of hot debate where the V10 would come out much louder, much more exuberant, revved higher, it was much more of a supercar engine. But of course, the aficionados still like the V8, a little bit lighter, a little bit sweeter in the chassis.
The motoring journalists in the world. But I did
enjoy the debate. And then I was sort of with you, because obviously quite early in my career that I wanted to be seen as, having the right motoring journalism view on these things. But then every time I drove the V10, I was like, what am I talking about? This thing is awesome. What an engine.
Yeah. The V10 always had that sort of more musical engine note, but I think the V8 was probably more exciting. I think because it had a little bit more of a highly strung, high pitched note, which I really liked.
That's just because you want to buy one.
Yeah, it is. The V8. It's the car I look up constantly.
Just a little bit of pre-research before we turn the mics on. I was like, I'll check what used R8 V8 manuals are going for. Ollie was like, you don't need to look it up. They start at 29,800 and go up to 35 grand for a low mileage exhaust. You've been looking at them quite a lot.
I've been looking at them quite a lot. I do. Yeah, it's my guilty scrolling secret is the Audi R8s.
But just talking about last generation of that V10, that LMX that I drove, was one of the last line of that generation. Getting in it now, it's got a physical handbrake. The gearbox is quite slow. It's loud because it doesn't have any of the particulate filters that are needed. And the steering was so heavy. And then you realise, because I think the Audi was one of the first, you know, usable everyday supercars. Yeah. Back then, supercars were so much harder to live with day to day. And even though it's aged so well, that first generation end of line V10. But I had it for a week and I was like, this is quite hard work. And it makes you put the effort in, yeah.
You got out of it at the car park at Goodwood and you were like, there isn't even any USBs.
No,
you were like, this is outrageous. My phone's nearly out of battery.
Yeah, I had no way to charge. I didn't have a Bluetooth speaker with me. Yeah. And the only thing in the CD player was the GPS. Like, Google Maps was printed on a disc.
I did a road trip through, it was in the RS4, actually. One of the first sort of big trips I did for Autocar. And the sat nav. So I crossed into France and the sat nav stopped working. And I was like, oh no, this is really annoying. So I had to go to a shop, buy a physical map. I was on my own. So I sort of had it on the passenger seat, trying to navigate my way through France. Basically, I needed to put the French CD in, or the sort of like mainland Europe CD or something. I had no idea.
Because when did that? I also remember, because it was the era of diesel, I think Audi had done 3 on the bounce with the diesel engine, that they then did a diesel R8, which now sounds like a YouTube clickbait thumbnail. Because it was a V12.
V12
was it
TDI.
Was it from the Q7?
So it was called
it was used in the Q7 as well.
Yeah. They just dropped it into it was the fuel of the future, wasn't it, in 2008?
Yeah.
But it was an awesome thing. It was called the Le Mans Concept V12 TDI. They let a few journalists drive it, actually.
Yeah, I remember a red one in Miami,
Miami.
Yeah, bright red, big.
Did one catch fire?
Chrome. I don't think so.
I can't remember. Maybe I'm just a hearsay or not, but I don't know. Yeah, but it looked mad, and the fact it had a diesel engine, which... Diesel, it has its benefits.
Oh,
low torque,
yeah, completely. For days.
Yeah.
Black smoke comes out the back.
Rolling coal.
Which would be really interesting to have a diesel supercar like that nowadays, but then they didn't really go with it. Obviously, it was a technical...
they didn't take it beyond the prototype stage, but so it remains...
They made a lot
oddity.
Of noise about it for a long time. Mm. Keep sort of hinting that they would still do it.
Did you drive that one?
No, I didn't. But I think as soon as they moved away from it for racing, diesel for racing,
it's not worth it.
Yeah.
And then, so when did we get the new 2015?
The second gen came out. So the first gen started as just V8 only, then had V10 as well, mm-hmm. and offered the S-tronic gearbox as well as the manual. But then when the second gen came around, which was 2015, it went V10 only, automatic only.
Yeah.
And it lost a lot of respect from me at that point.
Wait, because... And then there was a GT, wasn't there? Was that the last the line, same time as that LMX with a wing on the back?
Yeah.
Wings make it look cooler. We're going to get onto a winged car that you drove recently.
Shot?
Yeah, it was my first photo shoot with Ollie Marriage. Yeah, we went to Ingolstadt to pick it
All the pics out of focus.
Day.
You know... Back
arty,
in the day, wasn't it?
Arty.
Yeah, you just make them smaller and they get sharper. Thank God for Instagram. But I know it was a lovely autumnal. I'd never seen leaves like it. I hadn't really travelled that far at that part of my life. And yeah, we just bombed around. It was great. That's where I thought this job was mad because I'd obviously read loads of all these stuff. And I was like, hold on, you just get paid to go to pick up supercars and drive them around the
yes,
world.
Come
that was
on,
it.
Rowan.
And this was done. Before the internet had really taken over and you had to do a million things at the same time. I think we probably spent 3 days driving around for 400 words or something like that. Had a lovely lunch. It was all good.
Those are the days.
And before video came along. But that was cool. I remember because it had the canards on it and then a frozen kind of bluey grey paint, which then they've continued that GT throughout.
Yeah.
And then they've done rear-wheel drive,
rear-wheel series.
But before that, there was another oddity. There's all sorts of these weird moments. So Audi, they did an R8 e-tron concept. I seem to remember it being red. It looked a lot like the production car, but it was an all-electric version of the R8. Yeah. And then in 2015, they did an e-tron, an R8 e-tron. And they presented it as a production car, and I think they sold a very small number of them with the sort of an intention of actually selling a few. So yeah, it was in 2015. It had a 280-mile range. You could look it up. There's a blue car.
It's a twin motor, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Rear-wheel drive, 450-odd horsepower.
Exactly.
So they'd done all the specs. They had it probably fair, absolutely ready to go.
Yeah.
And then someone went, hang about.
And it was the weirdest thing, because there wasn't an announcement that said, actually, we've killed this. It just went completely quiet. I remember chasing Audi for best part of 2 years. So can we have a go in it? It's a production car. And those emails sort of
There's another one at the same time, which was the SLS electric drive.
The SLS E-Cell, yeah.
Which was sold, and they are around, and they've just gone into some vault somewhere and never seen again. It's like, what are these electric cars made out of?
That one
just
was
been
amazing,
more...
though, because that had four... Was it in-wheel motors? Or
it was torque vectoring.
It had
like
an individual motor. So I remember it. I remember reading the sort of period reviews of it, and it was like, come on, you know, it weighs whatever it weighs, probably approaching 2 tons. And yet, the way it went around the corner was like something that weighed a lot less. So it was the first time everyone had experienced the sort of capabilities of torque vectoring and how it can slingshot you around despite
but also, like, the way that electric cars have come on now, because that must have been 2014, 10 years ago, like, that SLS was really cool as an electric car, and so the R8 would have been. Yeah. You could have changed people's perception of, you know, going into EVs, because then afterwards they all kind of died off, and then Tesla came on the scene, and then it's just turned into a horsepower war. And then you've got these apps, and then you had post-Veyron, Chiron, where numbers and price came into, like, massively into it, that then you've got the Nevera, the Batista, the Avaya, where they're so out of our league and everyone else's league, whereas the SLS and the R8 were kind of approachable.
Versions of supercars that seemed accessible.
And then you go, oh, they're quiet and they're quicker. You're like, well, that's a good thing.
There. I saw the SLS E-Cell at Brooklands, Mercedes-Benz World the other day, actually, so they've got one here. We should revisit that.
Is it the blue, the mirror blue, or
the
yellow?
The highlighter yellow.
Yeah. God, the mirror blue.
I can't remember. There's a sort of plaque. I've got a picture on my phone somewhere. I think it was like $300,000 or $400,000 in the day.
In old
10
money.
10 years ago. In old money. You know, halfpennies and shillings.
But yeah, it shows that the you know, with that electric drive train, again, because that was obviously fed by the Le Mans program too, when then they went to hybrid e-tron when we first... It will get a bit confusing because no one really knew which brand was what. E-tron, is it electric or is it hybrid? And then since then, we're also still throwing out a load of V10s. And then they did Spiders, because I remember then you had a yellow second-generation Spider as a long-termer.
I had a hardtop.
Was it hardtop?
We did that road trip down to Val d'Isère.
Yeah, and this was before the time of suckered ski racks. So... Ollie, this is before Instagram had taken off and everyone was sticking whatever they can to the roof of their car.
I've been doing that for quite a long time.
Yeah. Basically, it was a Lilo that you put on top of
Handy
the car.
Handy rack, it was called. It was two like inflatable things you blow up. It's like armbands.
And then
it was armbands for the roof of your car.
You just shut them in the door.
Yeah, you literally put them over the car and just strapped them. One went through the engine bay, I think.
No,
it didn't melt.
It went through the cabin.
And one went through the cabin above our heads.
It was the most painful thing. We went down to Val d'Isère to watch Audi sponsor the downhill ski too. So we thought, oh, this would be good. And then especially the Spider, I don't really fit in R8s or Huracans at the same time. But this, because there was a ratchet strap that basically went across the cabin, took about 6 inches of the roof, like off the roof. So my hair, each individual hair was being pulled out for like 12 hours on a road trip while we had some skis flapping around on the top.
Put a hat on.
It was so fun. It was a coupe. But we did it. We went to Premier Neige. This matters to me. Mm-hmm. This was like the first race of the season. And we were like December, we went down. But we had to pack into an R8. And this was the challenge. I said, I'm definitely skiing while I'm there. So my kit's going in. So skis on the back and ski boots and all the rest of it in. Plus Rowan's photography kit. And getting all of that into an R8 was not the work of a moment. Everything was packed so precisely into what it was, where it had to fit in particular slots.
Yeah. Oh, I might just get a snack. Don't touch anything.
It's all going to fall out.
Oh, I need some fresh socks. Nope.
It was also a bit sick because I think we left on Friday after work. And then we were back for like Sunday evening or something.
Yeah,
we literally
I think we did two nights. Maybe we did.
Yeah. So, but anyway,
it was quite hardcore.
But yeah, that V10 V10, you don't get bored of it. And that's, talking about the usability, they really made from that first generation to the second generation how usable to do big distance. And I think that was the story we came back with at the time of how easy it is to have a V10 supercar that you can just drive, you know, take on a weekend drive down to the Alps and back again.
Because that was the thing with Audis, and I think it's why it contrasted so well, because although it was shared so much underpinnings with the Huracan, you get into it, and if they don't have much headroom, the visibility's all cut down.
The seats are torturous.
Seats can be, Lamborghini seats used to be just the worst seats. But they, for Audi, had managed to apply all the stuff that Audi was really good at already and put it in a supercar package and actually make that juxtaposition. And as a result, it felt a little bit ordinary because it wasn't asking so much of you. You could get in and just do distance and control it easily and just the heating. But it was still had a bloody exciting engine.
That's only a problem, like, philosophically, when you're actually in it and using the car and it works and the temperature's right and the seats are comfortable. You're like, this is a good
car. And it had a mega
cabin.
Second gen car had a really good cabin because they'd done, was it Audi did the virtual cockpit in the 2Ts things? And they were great. That was a really good system. It was really intuitive to use.
But you had the buttons that you needed. Whereas now they would just vanquish the whole lot and just get rid of it. You had all the heating and stuff, which was really done on the kind of knurled dials for everything. And then it was all cascading towards you as a driver, so it made you feel super special. But also, talking about the Huracan, that's always been the interesting kind of debate and how much more expensive a Huracan is. But dynamically, the Lamborghini got, didn't get too much praise initially because it was seen as a bit of a boring Lamborghini, when actually, it's probably more Audi side. But the Audi dynamically, I don't know how you feel about this, Ollie, couldn't keep up, but it wasn't as exciting because of the Quattro system. But then they did the rear wheel series, which made it a bit more interesting, I think, because it could skid
more. But I just think that the R8 never quite lived up to what it should have been. I think Audi got are a very conservative company, and I think they did it. And every time the engineers have probably gone, right, this GT version, you know that 911 GT3, we're going to have at it. We're taking 100 kilos
and
out.
Like, whoa.
And they've all been, no, that's not how you sell more cars. What you do is you fit more gadgets in it, you call it a GT, and you pop it back out the door.
Yeah.
So they've
with a wing on the back,
Or some laser lights.
And some laser
which
lights
have a really cool sticker that say radiation on them, and then that's always used to scare us, also intrigue us at the same time.
I think you're building up to something. So they never really fully let their hair down and went, here's what a Huracan
beating version. So it's never had the breadth that a 911 did or a Huracan did. Because they just kept going back to being a bit ordinary. And you look at what they've done with a 911, and they've gone into GT3s and RSs on one side, and then now they've done Dakars and stuff on the other. Audi always kept pretty much in its lane.
Which
with the R8.
Is surprising, because the customer racing side of R8s, they sell a load of them.
They do.
Over the race cars.
They do.
And they've been really successful. And Porsche do exactly the same thing, but lean into that motorsport kind of objective and put it on the road. That's the whole RS department. That's just over the last 8-10 years, it's driven Porsche fans nutty, whereas Audi haven't really been able to do that, even though they are as successful at the Nürburgring, etc.
But I think this leads into what Jack was alluding to, which is that I've just been and driven something which is an Audi R8 racing car that's road legal. It's very cool. So, Audi do this thing called the R8 LMS GT2, which is their customer racing car. So it is an R8, but it is 350 kilos lighter with roll cage and 640 horsepower.
350
kilos lighter.
That's proper lightweight.
Yeah, they've done the job properly, and they've sold loads of them to customer racing teams for, I think they sell them for about 400,000 quid. Now, Audi's sort of partner firm for motorsport is a company called Abt, which is actually someone's surname. And they've done all of Audi's DTM, or they did all of Audi's DTM racing for a long time. They won multiple championships with them. They're also a very highly regarded tuning company for Volkswagen Audi Group.
Plus two Formula E, like they're across
everything. They do everything. Yeah. They're a really big, very successful race and tuning company. So they've taken this LMS GT2 and said, I think we can do more with this. We don't just have to use it as a racing car. Could we turn it back into a road car? And they can. They've done it. It's called the Abt XGT. And there was quite a lot of noise around it about November last year when they sort of announced it. I've now been and driven it. Which, and it's wild. They've had to do so much work to it that it no longer has an Audi VIN plate in it. It's an ABD VIN plate. ABD is the manufacturer of this car because it's had to go through German TÜV, TÜV regulations, and which is so difficult to get a car through. Mm. So it's had to do full emissions testing. It's had to be crash tested. So they've got all the figures for it. So it does, the on the WLTP cycle, this racing car does 13.6 miles to the gallon and has 473 grams a kilometre of CO2 emissions, making it fairly thirsty on fuel. But the only real changes, they basically had to do three things when I sort of digested it all to make it road civilized. One, they've had to change the gearbox, so it does not use a straight cut racing gearbox. Yeah. It uses the 7-speed twin clutch car gearbox, but heavily modified from the R8. Then they've the engine bushing. So rather than being rigid mounted to the tub, which is, as anyone who's listened to a video about the Aston Valkyrie will know, oh my God, that is noisy inside. So they've bushed the engine to the back of the tub. So that's, you lose a load of vibration and a load of noise. And the suspension's not rose jointed. So the suspension's now got proper bushings in it, which means it's not a complete handful when you're trying to do 150 miles. It's not really twitchy and trying to give you all the information. It filters much more. And apart from that,
but ride height's the same?
They've lifted it fractionally. But to compensate for that, they fitted bigger wheels. So the race car runs on 18s. The road car runs on 19s at the front and 20s at the back because they wanted to have it still to have that race look to it. So they've lifted it slightly because they need to get the carbon splitter over stuff. It's still, the best thing is, it's got two fuel flaps. And on one side, it's just the fuel flap. You open the other side, it's your air jack jacking point. Hey. So you've still got the air jacks in it.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh my God, you've got air jacks through regulations. This is the best thing ever. Just rock
just
up.
Just any time you try stealing this. Like jack the car up.
You need a man to come in with his gas cylinder and jack it up.
But so, how the hell have they got it through pedestrian safety? It's basically got knives attached to the front and back of it.
This is it. How have they done that in Germany, which is, those regs are notoriously difficult. If you get them passed in Germany, you basically can drive the car anywhere in the world. And it still uses the rear wing from the GT2 car. That is the GT2 rear wing. It's, I don't understand, because I said to them, how is this, how have you done this? How is this now road legal? And they went, it is. I said, but this, through regulations like this? Mm. Yeah, done.
Has it got the 2024 regulation lane keep assist and the speed bong? It's so annoying.
No, it doesn't. No touchscreens inside.
Ah.
No touchscreens at all. Better for it, obviously. But what you have got, because it's a race team, and what you know about really good race teams is the engineering of all the bits inside. Like, because you're in a fixed DTM seat, and the only thing they've had to do is they've had to cut back the headrest bit sides, because a lot of those modern racing cars have got really long sides and they've had to open them back, obviously, so you can actually see out the sides. But the push of the buttons and things and the pedal adjustment, it's all done on these beautiful switches and everything. Mm. So you just go, oh, this is really tactile. It's like driving a Rolls Royce when you coo at things, adjusting the air vents and stuff like that. It's the same sort of thing, except for it's all very motorsport. But there's an authenticity to it that I just don't think you find anywhere else. Mm. And it's almost, because I was comparing, because it's, okay, it's silly money. They're building 99 of them, and it's pretty much the same sort of money as an SF90XX. So that, I think, is 670 grand. This one plus tax in the UK will be 610, somewhere around there. So it's a lot of money. But there's an authenticity to it that I don't think you get from a car that's started as a road car and gone to being a track car.
Yeah.
When you get a race car that they've converted back to road use, and yet you sit in it and it's still got like the half moon steering wheel and the full roll cage in it, and you're sitting in a DTM seat and you look in the mirrors and you've got the daft rear wing out the back, it feels very authentic.
Yeah.
It's not like you're in a road car, you're driving something bonkers. And then everyone else on the road looks at that roof scoop and just goes, that's really funny.
But also, is it pointless at the same time? Couldn't you go save 200 grand and get the track car? Like, because what tyres is it on?
It's on Trofeo R's. You can have it with slicks if you want to have the full effect. No, there's something about it. It's one of those cars that got under my skin a bit. And I didn't expect
basically
it to.
Basically, Ollie's perfect road car.
Yeah.
We found it.
not far off.
It's a GT2 race car.
Yeah, yeah. It's a sort of honing to all those elements of it, which just, and like the ride's really good. Yeah, it's noisy in there. So after a couple of hours, there's no sound deadening, or not much sound deadening. For a couple of hours, you'd be in trouble, but you stick a set of plugs in, wouldn't you? Because you're probably going to be in there by yourself anyway. So, and it's fine. It rides really well, and it's just the way you were saying earlier about how cars go over speed bumps can tell you quite a lot. Same in this. You go over imperfections, and just the way the dampers react is the sort of thing that the geek in me goes, "Whoa, did you feel that? Oh, that felt expensive."
Yeah.
And I love that about it.
Do you know the one thing we need to do? So you've tested it. Did you do a video?
Yeah.
So shot video.
Yeah. In Mallorca. How's that? That nice location to go in February.
Yeah.
So yeah, they did. Went out to Mallorca, drove it. There's a racetrack in Mallorca. It's not bad, actually. So drove it around the racetrack and then drove it on road as well.
Yeah, nice. Well, we just need to get it in the Top Gear car park and do that. Speed bump uphill.
You can hear the splitter detach. Then go over your wheels and then the other set of wheels. It's fine.
Yeah. I've spun it. Mm. Perfect. Mm. Great car. So it's the R8 that Audi never had the balls to build.
Probably, yeah. That's one way of looking at it.
And is it a good way to go out, do you think?
Yeah, in a way it is, but also it's taken a third party to come along and do this to an R8.
Well, they did a pretty radical final GT for the last model, haven't they, with the same kind of swan neck spoiler and all that stuff, but it's nowhere near.
But it's not, again, it's that sort of more cosmetic-y thing that's been
coming
done
from
it, really.
Yeah, it's coming from this sort of comfy, usable supercar upwards rather than, as you say.
Yeah.
Sort of chamfering the edges off a race car and have at it.
And I don't think, I mean, you see those done, but they're nearly always done as one-offs, aren't they? Those race cars that are converted back to road use, like the Schuppan 962.
I was surprised when you said they're making 99 of them.
I think it's quite punchy.
Well, think about how many race cars they make, and there's a lot of people who like this stuff. I don't think that'd be problem. And they've got a customer base right there. So, do you want one of these you can drive to the shops? Yeah, fine.
I mean, it is the ultimate track day car, and you can drive it there. Don't stick it on a trailer.
Well, you drive it to the N24 and win, and then go back again. So is it the future of the R8?
Yeah.
Dying. Are we sad? What should come next? You know.
Well, I mean, there's two ways to look at it. They did show a concept car, so the PB18 e-tron. Have a look. It's a really good looking thing. It's a pure electric concept car from a few years ago. Kind of a sort of bit of a shooting brake thing going on there. Us and everyone else immediately leapt on that and said, this is Audi dipping its toe in the water for the next gen R8, pure electric, but taking it in a different styling direction. That could be one way to go. There is, we know, going to be a new, brand new Huracan. We're going to see it sometime this year, around the summer, I think. That's going to be a plug-in hybrid, probably a V8 twin-turbo plug-in hybrid. So they could buddy up with Lamborghini again. It feels like they probably don't want to do that. I don't know. Audi is obviously pushing electric cars, pure electric cars, much harder than Lamborghini needs to. And if you're going to have a tech flagship, then now would be the time to do it as an all-electric car.
It's a question of whether Lamborghini need the extra thing of from Audi to help offset the costs of development of a
but it's also it's been a success for Audi, from branding for a younger generation, on the used car market. It's a lot of people's entry points to a supercar. It'd be mad for them just to completely kill it off, but we have seen stranger things happen.
I have to say, I'm a bit with Jack on this. I think they're going to kill it. I don't think it's going to come back.
No, I don't think it will.
But I think we're going electric.
The happy ending to this story is probably the best version of an R8 is that original with the V8 engine and the manual gearbox, and those are the ones that you can have for relative peanuts for 30-35 grand now. So if you are an R8 fan,
for the cost of an electric crossover,
for your new Renault 5.
Get them while you still can, people, because it's a seminal car. And
can you not tell people to get them while they still can? I don't want the prices to
drive
it up. I need to bite the bullet. I know it.
But let us know your thoughts on the Audi R8. Open up Spotify and tell us in the comments what you think the best one is and what they should do in the future. Let us know what you think of this podcast. It's always good at that time. Rate and review. But as Ollie said, that apt GT2 car, there is a video coming on that, and I think there's a lot more we can do with that this year to make some cool
Speed
stuff.
Week. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. I've got something in my throat.
Oh, right. Or a stick lap, maybe. Considering it is a road car, stick lap for a race car, it does go over, so legit. we'll have to get it across.
So we can drive it there. All right, that's it. Thanks for listening. Catch you on the next one.